Good morning and welcome to Books and Beer. I am your host, Michael Malone. Our guest today is the young adult author, Annabelle Monahan, author of A Girl Named Digit and its follow-up, Double Digit. We will sample the Headless Horseman Pumpkin Ale from Defiant Brewing over in Pearl River and something called Lethargic Mallard from Rushing Duck in Orange County, New York. Annabelle, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
So tell us about this series. We've got a great character named Digit. Why don't you tell us about Digit?
So Digit is a 17-year-old math genius who accidentally stumbles on a terror plot. And the terrorists find out that she knows who they are. So she has to be kidnapped for her own protection by the FBI. And mm-hmm. she goes into hiding to catch the bad guys and falls in love. Sort of how you remember high school, I imagine.
Absolutely. Okay. And what year did the first book come out?
The first book came out in 2012.
Okay. All right. And I'm curious, when you first heard that this character you gave birth to would come out in book form, what were you doing? What was your reaction when you heard?
I couldn't believe it. And I had been writing the first book sort of in secret. I don't even think I told my husband until I was halfway through writing the book. So I never actually thought it was gonna become anything. And when it did, I thought, wow, I have a whole new life ahead of me. It's very exciting.
Oh, sure. And it was not your first book, though. You had a nonfiction one prior.
Yeah, I've written a nonfiction book, which is a totally different process. You know, mm-hmm. you're not in control. You don't have as much imaginative control. You have to stick to the facts.
Sure.
So this was, you know, writing fiction was just such a departure into being able to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
What's the name of the nonfiction book?
The nonfiction book is, if you have time on the air, because it's such a long title.
Well, we got about 50 minutes.
Okay, yeah. Here you go. It is Click, The Girl's Guide to Knowing What You Want and Making It Happen.
Okay.
And that was published by Simon & Schuster and could have had a shorter title if I had it to do again. But it is it's sort of a book about positive thinking for teenagers, a little bit of a self-help book about setting goals for yourself and then figuring out exactly what you're going to do to get there and sort of getting out of your own way and not complaining along the way. So it was a fun book.
Hey, how did that book come to be? Had you had any training in say teen psychology or
no. You know, I really hadn't, and I actually don't even have daughters, so I have three sons, and people always say, how can you write a self-help book for girls if you don't even have a daughter? But it turns out I was a teenager. So my friend Elizabeth Wolf, who I wrote this book with, she and I sort of dug deep into what we remembered about being 15 and sort of hiding from our gifts and just like not making the most of every situation because we sort of wanted to fit in instead. And we just drew on that to write the book. So, no, not a psychologist.
Okay. All right. Well, it seems like there's some thematic consistency with the Digit series where it's sort of embracing your gifts, even if they're not traditionally embraced gifts,
or definitely.
If it makes you a little different.
Definitely. And I think it's important for all teenagers, really, actually women my age too. But I think for teenage girls, you know, from the age of like 12 to 20, you're spending a lot of time trying to fit into what the media is telling you want to be, what your friends want to do, the way everybody's dressing, the way you think you need to look. And I think you give up a lot of power. You don't want to necessarily be the smartest girl in the room. Mm-hmm. And you don't really want to embrace all your talents. So for girls like that, you know, the Digit books are really about she's a math genius and she hides from it. None of her friends know that she's a genius. And she ends up finding out that, you know, she has to embrace these gifts to save the world and win the guy and, you know, be happy in the long run.
Oh, sure. And when did you realize that you wanted to be an author?
When I was a little kid.
Really?
Yeah, I was really a little kid. I used to write stories. You know, it's sort of a legitimate way to lie. You know, you're just right. Making stuff up and, you know, nobody can call you out on whether it's true or not. And I always wanted to do that. And I actually studied English in college and I took a lot of writing classes. And then when it was time for me to graduate from college, I realized that I couldn't support myself as a writer. And that's almost impossible to do. So I got a job at Goldman Sachs and I went into work in banking and completely took a different turn in my life. And as a result, I never wrote anything until I was 37 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. How did you end up with an agent for the nonfiction book?
This is an annoying story because it's happenstance. It's like meeting somebody on a bus. Elizabeth and I went about it in a very methodical way. You know, we wrote a query letter and we sent it out to agents and we were going to be very methodical about it. And one day my 14-year-old niece called me to tell me that she had gotten an internship with a literary agent in Los Angeles. And I said, oh, wait. Do you think you could show her my query letter? And so she handed her the query letter and she signed us. So it happened in such a sort of accidental way. But then I was lucky because when I wanted to start writing fiction, I already had an agent.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's really half the battle.
Oh, sure, sure. At least. Was your agent amenable to you taking on fiction then or wanted you to stick with them?
You know, I always think there's just a little bit of an eye roll when you've written nonfiction. And you say, you know, I want to write a novel.
Right.
Everyone wants to write a novel. But she was willing to read the first three chapters and, you know, luckily liked it. So.
Okay. Now, with the subject matter of really all three books, do you hear from girls or women that just want to say thank you?
All the time.
Oh,
all the time.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's the best part of my day. Yeah.
Oh, very cool. All right, I want to hear more about this, but we do have to take a short break. Back in a few with Annabelle Monahan, author of A Girl Named Digit, here on Books and Beer.
Now with Fox News commentary, here's Fox News Radio's Todd Starnes on 1460 WVOX.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
The smarter way to manage business expenses, presented by Concur.
After my conference, I checked out of the hotel and the bill was automatically added to my expense report. Then I hopped into a taxi. I snapped a photo of the receipt using Concur, and bam, there it was on my expense report. Then I used my corporate card to buy the client's lunch. Another charge added to my expense report.
Expense reports that write themselves. Just one of the many ways Concur helps manage your company's spend so you can focus on the big picture. Take a free test drive today at tryconcur.com.
Zachary Hoagland had just crossed the finish line, first place in the district cross-country meet, an historic moment for Iowa's Davis County High School. But as he was celebrating, he saw another runner in medical distress.
The guy standing there about 20 meters from the finish line, and he just looked awful. I mean, like, his face was turning white, he was holding his chest, he looked like he was going to fall. And I didn't really want to see that.
So Zach bolted back onto the course to give his rival a helping hand. But instead of being congratulated for his good deed, Zach was disqualified. It seems the Iowa High School Athletic Association has a rule. Runners are not allowed to give assistance to other runners. Zach was heartbroken, but still believes he did the right thing, and if he had to do it all over again, Zach says he would do the same thing. Proving sometimes you don't have to finish first to be a winner. I'm Todd Starnes.
In the north end of New Rochelle, you'll find an absolutely top-notch printer, one of the very best in the entire county. Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is known for its fine work far beyond the Sound Shore area. In fact, this particular Minuteman Press is easily the class of the fleet when it comes to full-service community printers. Located just off North Avenue in New Rochelle in the narrow Waikagil walkway across the parking lot from the A&P, Frank Maselli's Minuteman Press is a terrific resource for individuals and small to medium-sized companies who want something very special when it comes to printing. No matter how big or how small your needs, you get great skill and creativity from Maestro Maselli's master printers, all for very reasonable prices. From business cards to brochures, color copies, high-speed printing, informational booklets, and flyers, it's Minuteman Press down that walkway when you're heading to the A&P, offering quality printing at very good prices. Call Frank Maselli at Minuteman Press of New Rochelle, 914-576-0335. 914-576-0335.
There are quite a number of neighborhood flower shops around Westchester County these days. As in all things, some are better than others. And in the Colonial Village Shopping Center on Weaver Street in Scarsdale, just to the north of New Rochelle, there exists a florist of very great style and renown. Colonial Village Flowers specializes in beautiful seasonal flowers arranged in good taste with the lovely low-key result that all Colonial Village presentations, bouquets, and arrangements look like they were actually grown, collected, and gathered in the natural setting of your own garden. Good taste in flowers has for years been a special trademark of Joe Ward and his talented floral arrangers at Colonial Village, featuring the natural look without pomp or ceremony. So please know that there is at least one flower shop on your classy wavelength. Joe Ward's Colonial Village Flowers at 1515 Weaver Street in Scarsdale. Call 723-2888. That's 723-2 3/8.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 after 8 in the morning, we invite you to listen to Wartburg Moment, where in 60 seconds you can hear what Wartburg Senior Care can offer. And Wartburg Senior Care offers a great deal. Wartburg Moment is simply a way to briefly tell you what a great difference a community of hope and of healing can make in one's life. Wartburg Moment will bring you information on compassionate senior care, independent living, and integrated senior care services. You will hear in these weekly moments all about Meadowview Assistant Living and, of course, spiritual care. You will learn that senior living at Wartburg in their beautiful landscape grounds is quite wonderful. You'll hear about Wartburg's great care offered at their award-winning nursing home and new rehabilitation center. So listen every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 after 8 in the morning to Wartburg's Moment and hear what you really need to know about Wartburg Senior Care. It's 60 seconds well worth listening to.
For more than 50 years, Vox Populi, the voice of the people. Heard in the land right here at AM 1460 and all over the world at WVOX.com. With business news at 20 past the hour, here's the latest update from the Fox Business Network on 1460 WVOX.
From the Fox Business Network, the Dow opens higher. Investors are waiting to hear more about the economy and interest rates. Analysts say there's almost no chance that the central bank will raise rates, but the statement at 2 o'clock today will probably give clues about when rates might go up. 307 million people actively use Twitter, and yet Twitter lost $132 million in the last quarter. Northrop Grumman made a big pitch for the military's long-range bomber. The company beat out rivals to win the contract. It's now on track to begin work on the $80 billion project. And Adele is singing a happy tune. According to the New York Post, negotiators for the British singer are so confident her new album will be a huge hit, they're pitching Apple on a $30 million tour sponsorship. With the Fox Business Report, I'm Carol Zimmer.
The Smarter Way to Manage Business Expenses, presented by Concur.
After my conference, I checked out of the hotel and the bill was automatically added to my expense report. Then I hopped into a taxi. I snapped a photo of the receipt using Concur and bam, there it was on my expense report. Then I used my corporate card to buy the client's lunch. Another charge added to my expense report.
Expense reports that write themselves. Just one of the many ways Concur helps manage your company's spend so you can focus on the big picture. Take a free test drive today at tryconcur.com.
There's always something happening on 1460 WVOX. WVOX.
Good morning. Welcome back to Books and Beer. I am here with Annabelle Monahan, author of A Girl Named Digit. And before we broke, Annabelle was talking about, due to this, the subject matter of the books, kind of empowering girls to embrace ways that they're different and gifts that they have that may not seem like gifts to everybody else. You'd said that you've been approached by some readers that kind of connected with your material?
Yeah, definitely. I get emails all the time, and it's really the best part of being an author. You know, if a girl, you get an email from a 14-year-old girl that says, you know, these are my favorite books I've ever read. I mean, it just wow. Feels really incredible. But what's really meaningful is that, you know, Digit is this math genius. So she has to crack all these math codes as the story goes on. Mm-hmm. So there's actually a lot of math in these books, which sounds terrible, but it's you know, more of a romance and a suspenseful thriller and sort of a comedy. So I feel like I've wrapped up a lot of math in more fun things. And the emails that I get that I really just love are girls who say, I always hated math, and now I'm looking at it in a more practical way.
Wow.
And I'm seeing how, you know, it's really all around us on, you know, plane tickets and credit cards and the internet. And so they're just sort of changing the way they think about math.
Oh, but that's great.
It's fun.
What do you think about maybe reading something from the book?
Sure. I will read you, this sort of sets up the story.
Okay.
I'll read you the entire first chapter, which is barely anything. It's two very short pages.
Okay, and this is the first book. This is A Girl Named Digit.
This is the first book, A Girl Named Digit, yes.
Okay.
The second book starts when she starts college, about 3 months after the first book.
Okay,
ends.
Go for
okay.
it.
So the first chapter is called My Life is Based on a True Story. On the morning of my kidnapping, my mom's makeup was perfect. After years of training in television and film, she had mastered how to apply exactly the right amount so that she would appear flawless to the camera while not looking garish in person. Smoky gray eyeshadow framed her lids, and the lightest application of mascara, waterproof for the somber occasion, darkened her lashes. She'd lined her lips in what I knew was her go-to lip liner and filled it in with the palest nude lipstick. To the untrained eye, she looked as if she could have woken up like this. At once tragic and gorgeous. What surprised me more was her outfit, which had taken some serious thought. Our house is painted French blue, with a darkly stained brown door surrounded by hot pink bougainvillea that creeps down the walls like ivy. She stood perfectly framed in the doorway in a turquoise t-shirt with the thinnest stripe of that same exact hot pink. Her white linen pants looked crisp against the backdrop and picked up the trim around the door. Perfect. I'm sure I'm the only one who noticed this, as everyone else probably focused on the brigade of television cameras that surrounded her, and the fact that she was sobbing. One guy from CBS yelled out above the others, "Mrs. Higgins, when did you notice she was gone?" She looked down and whispered, "Gone," and started sobbing again. The hungry reporters realized that beside the dramatic clip for the evening news promo, they were getting nowhere with her. They turned to my dad, who looked a little disheveled in his normal college professor way. No different at 8 a.m. than at 8 p.m. Always direct, he spoke right into the camera. "We found the ransom note by the front door at 6:47 this morning. We immediately checked our daughter's room and found her missing. We called the police at 6:55. A chipper young woman from Fox asked, "Does your daughter have a habit of disappearing? Has she ever been in trouble before? Are any of her friends involved?" My dad squared his shoulders at the camera. "We have a missing 17-year-old girl and a ransom note. The police and her mother and I are treating this like what it is, a kidnapping. My daughter has never been in any danger before this." NBC local news asked, "Didn't the ransom note say not to call the police? Aren't you worried the kidnappers will see this on TV and harm your daughter?" Dad looked like a deer in headlights. Apparently, he hadn't thought this all the way through. The past 24 hours had been a blur of constantly changing lies, all strung loosely together. "We have nothing more to say," he said. He and Mom walked back into the house. I watched this whole scene from a warehouse in downtown Los Angeles on a 6-inch TV with an actual antenna. Big budget kidnapping? Not. I sat on one of two mismatched upholstered armchairs in a windowless room where I couldn't even tell night from day. The only reason I knew it was 5 o'clock just then, besides the replay of my kidnapping story on the 5 o'clock news, was that my captor came in with dinner. He caught the tail end of the segment and watched with me as my mom opened the front door for a second time to offer a despondent wave to the cameras. He plopped down in the other chair and smiled. "What do you want to do now?" And that's it.
I love it. I love it. You are going straight into the action here. None of this kind of beating around the bush.
You know, it's funny that you say that because with... you know, in the olden days, you used to be able to beat around the bush because people didn't have anything to do besides read. And when you're trying to capture the attention of a 13 or a 14-year-old, they could put down the book and go do something more fun at any moment.
Yep.
So you really do. I mean, in young adult fiction, you have to jump right in to what's happening and exciting.
I think it's a good lesson for any novelist, not just young adult novelists.
Yeah, our attention spans are just shorter than they used to be.
Yep.
So we got to shift for that.
Sure, sure. And how do you view the whole reading process? Obviously, part of promoting your books is being out there reading at bookstores and other events. Do you enjoy it?
I love it. I actually do. And it's sort of uncommon because most people that like to write like to be alone and are more introverted. I actually really like going out and talking to readers. What I find with teenagers is they're less interested in hearing about a book that they haven't read yet. Mm-hmm. And they're more interested in hearing about the writing process. So I always talk a little bit about my books and I use my books as examples, but they want to know how to do what I'm doing.
Right, right.
So that's always, it's always a really fun discussion.
Oh, sure, sure. Now it's obviously set in Los Angeles. You come from the West Coast, yeah?
I am from Los Angeles. Okay. All of my people are from Los Angeles.
And you live in Rye?
I live in Rye.
How did you end up here?
I moved away to college. I went to Duke in North Carolina, and then I got, my first job was in New York. And then I kept intending to go back. I was always going to move back to Los Angeles, but then I'd get a job or I met my husband, and I've just stayed. Yeah. So I'm a fully converted East Coast person now.
Still have a lot of family in LA?
Every single person that I'm related to is still there. So yes, they're all there and they all think I'm crazy.
Okay. All right. Well, so any television or film opportunities for this series?
Yeah, I actually did. A few years ago, the Disney Channel bought the rights to A Girl Named Digit, and it was very exciting. It was like the single biggest moment of my life.
Oh my gosh.
And
besides the show here, right?
Yes. Besides this, drinking beer at 10 o'clock in the morning, which I like. So that was really exciting. And they bought it because they thought it was an exciting thriller and the romance and the suspense and all that. And when they went to write a script, they had 18 months to get this going. They realized that the Disney Channel can't have guns. They can't have terrorists. They can't have romance. And it really wasn't the right property for them. Almost anyone who's not the Disney Channel could make this into a movie.
Sure.
So they came up with a script that was sort of dull because it took out all the fun parts. And so they didn't start filming. So now I have the rights back.
Okay.
And that's sort of in talk. There are people talking about it. I'm talking to a television producer about it now.
So oh, fantastic.
Might be fun.
Okay, good. All right, we're going to take a break, back in a couple minutes to discuss books and beer and very definitely discuss the Defiant Brewing Headless Horseman Pumpkin Ale with Annabelle Monahan.
And national news. Here is the latest update from Fox News Radio on 1460 WVLX.
Fox News Radio. I'm Chris Foster. There's a Republican presidential debate in Colorado tonight with Ben Carson ahead of Donald Trump in some polls.
Last night in Sioux City, Trump almost begged voters to put him back on top.
Iowa, will you get your numbers up, please? I promise you, I will do such a good job.
Perhaps the candidate, though, with the most pressure to perform tonight is Jeb Bush. He spent the weekend with his brother, his mother, and father, hoping to reassure nervous backers that he is still in it to win it.
Fox's John Roberts in Boulder. A record earnings report from Apple.
The most valuable company in the world, announcing it sold just over 48 million iPhones in the fiscal fourth quarter. Demand in China certainly helped. The People's Republic generated $15.5 billion of sales, up 100% year over year. But iPad sales were down 20%, making it the seventh straight quarter of decline.
Fox Business Network's Jolene Kent. Fox News, we report. You decide.
From the WVOX News Center, I'm Jared Cirillo. A woman's car plowed into a construction site in Yonkers. The woman apparently lost control before it smashed into a fence near Warburton Avenue. The car plunged 30 feet into a ditch and landed on its roof Monday. The woman went to a hospital with serious injuries. Commuters, a couple of good news here. Bus service improvements along I-287 are getting a huge injection of money. First, a $10 million boost from the federal government. The money would pay for new bus stations, ramp signals, and other technology to create a better ride for users of Hudson Links, which would replace the Tappan Zee Express within the next few years. And commuters may soon see Metro North improvements. Today, the MTA board may approve 2 $2.6 billion for the line as part of its capital plan of $26 billion. The money would lead to buying new train cars and improving stations on the line. And that's what's happening from the WVOX News Center. I'm Jared Cirillo.
Our Wednesday morning forecast calling for an overcast and wet day. There'll be periods of rain and showers throughout the daytime into this evening. Highs today between 60 and 65, southeast winds at 15 to 25. Some of that rain this evening could be locally heavy with some thunderstorms and strong gusty winds and heavy downpours with those as the front moves through, overnight lows down near 60. Some light rain or showers left over early Thursday will give way to a clearing trend becoming partly sunny. 70 to 75 tomorrow, a mild day. At night, mostly clear, 46. Friday, sunshine, 58. Last day of the month, Halloween, Saturday, sunshine, 56. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for 1460 WVOX.
Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather is brought to you on WVOX by Energy and the Indian Point Energy Center. Right for New York.
Recently, some people have had questions about the plants that generate our electricity here in New York. You have a right to know the facts about one of the most important providers of power to our area. Did you know that Indian Point provides about a quarter of the electricity for New York City and Westchester, with virtually no emissions and at lower cost? Indian Point's operations are constantly reviewed to ensure safety by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. It's among the most thoroughly reviewed nuclear energy facilities in the country, and that there are multiple federal inspectors on site, and the law guarantees them access to any document, any employee, and any portion of the facility. That's accountability, every day, all the time. I'm Teresa Motko, and I'm an engineer here at Indian Point, and my family and I live in the area. All of us have a right to know why Indian Point is right for New York. Visit rightfornewyork.com for answers.
Where many different voices are heard in the land. 1460 WVOX.
Good morning. Welcome back to Books and Beer. Mike Malone, your host here with Annabelle Monahan, author of A Girl Named Digit. If you have any questions for me or more likely for Annabelle, you are absolutely welcome to call. Number is 914-636-0110. Annabelle mentioned something to me off the air before. She said, it's weird how much I like beer. And that is
thank you.
Music to my ears. So we had a chance to sample Defiant Brewing's Headless Horseman Pumpkin Ale. Defiant just turned 10, so happy birthday to Defiant, located across the river in Pearl River, New York. Here's what they say about the Headless Horseman. Brewed with American pumpkin, English, German, and Canadian malts, this ale has a complex yet gentle combination of caramel, biscuit, and cocoa with a finish of pumpkin pie. What'd you think of the beer?
You know how on Friday morning after Thanksgiving, the first thing you do is you get the pumpkin pie out of the fridge?
After I come back from Walmart, right?
Yes, after you come back from Walmart, yep. And your half marathon, I imagine, the turkey trot. That's what this beer tastes like to me. It is, and that's why it's so great that we're drinking it first thing in the morning.
Yep,
it absolutely tastes like cold pumpkin pie left over.
Well, that's funny. You know, I saw the pumpkin pie in the description here, and I thought, well, duh, of course it tastes like pumpkin pie because it's a pumpkin beer. But after tasting it, pumpkin pie is not just the pumpkin, but it's the crust as well. And this beer, to me, really felt like it had kind of the whole of a pumpkin pie represented.
And it's sweet,
right? Absolutely, it is, yeah.
Yeah. I would highly recommend this as your breakfast beer.
Breakfast beer, okay.
Your go-to breakfast beer.
Day after Thanksgiving, breakfast beer, okay.
Day after anything.
Yeah.
Really.
And it's a 5.6% alcohol, and pumpkin beers are interesting things. They come out very, very early in the season. They come out like midsummer or so, even though people tend to think of the pumpkin as more of a October, November type thing. But this has a lot of flavor and like you say, really goes well all times of day and probably would either go well with your Thanksgiving meal or the next day.
Oh, maybe.
With the leftovers.
Maybe. Yeah, I like that. Yep. Is 5.6% a lot of alcohol or a little alcohol?
It's kind of middle of the road. You know, it's more than a Budweiser, as you might expect, but less than the sort of craft beer IPAs that people like today. Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned your appreciation for beer. What's a good beer for you? What's something that you tend to gravitate toward?
I married a Canadian, so okay. I generally like the Canadian beer that he buys. I like the Molson. I like, what else does he get? The kind of Molson Canadian. It's okay. A specific kind of Molson.
One you can only Canadian. Mostly get in Canada.
You can find it here too.
Oh, you can. A little stronger than traditional Molson.
But I like a fairly plain beer.
Okay. All right. Well, we're trying to broaden some horizons here.
Yeah. Maybe too late, but okay. Okay.
Never too late. All right. I want to talk more about your writing. And your writing includes a column. Is that a weekly? How often do you crank
it's
out?
It's every other week.
Every other week. Okay. And what's the name of that one?
Well, it's when it appears in my local paper, the Rye Record, it's called Along for the Ride. R-Y-E apostrophe D.
Okay.
It's corny. I know.
Yeah, you know, it's something that works in print, obviously. It does. It's a little hard to say it out loud, but...
I'd be happy to never say it again. but then when it appears in the week, it's not called anything. I'm just their lifestyle columnist.
Okay. And what do you cover?
You know what? It's like the best job I've ever had. My assignment is write about anything as long as it's funny.
Yeah.
So I just write about whatever it is that's currently happening in my life, and mostly as a mother with children. That I think is funny. So my last piece was about how going to back to school night at a high school sort of feels like you're back in high school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're the cool kids and the nerds like me and, you know, how we all kind of jockey around each other. I write a little bit about what my kids are up to, but not too much because my kids don't want me to write too much about what my kids are up to.
Yeah, I mean, it's something every time I read David Sedaris, I'm thinking, oh, his family must hate him. Is that something you have to sort of balance?
I do. You know, I have teenagers. Yeah. So, I mean, I really, before I publish anything, I make sure everyone in my house has read it. Sometimes I throw the little kid under the bus because he doesn't read my column.
Okay.
But my husband, too. You know, I just make sure I'm not sharing too much of our life with people.
Right. Well, it's great. I love the idea of it's a weekly paper, the Rye Record?
Every other week, yeah.
Every other week.
Twice a month.
Okay. And your friends and your neighbors probably read your columns?
Yeah. Or? It's really well read. It's, you know, they frequently go viral on the internet. It's probably more well read than my books have been so far. They're just fun and short, you know, but 700 words.
Is that an opportunity to promote the fiction at all?
No, you know, it's funny. I write for two totally different audiences. So moms read my column and teenagers read my books.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about promoting books and promoting your writing on social media, I have lots of people who follow my Facebook page. Most of them are over 40.
Okay.
Those aren't the same readers who read my books. The readers of my books are more on Twitter and on Instagram. So it's sort of an interesting balance to not try to come off like too much of a lame mom to the teenagers. It's two different things.
Yeah. You're fun for the whole family, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. So talking about promoting and social media, obviously Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, these are all vital tools at our fingertips in terms of promoting our work. If it came down to Facebook or Twitter, which one do you think is more valuable to get the word out about your writing?
I like Facebook.
Oh, yeah?
I do. I find that Twitter is, if I'm scanning through it with my eyes, I don't get, and I imagine other people, my readers would feel this way, you don't get enough information to know if you want to click on it right away.
Uh-huh.
So I just look at Twitter and it just looks like a bunch of junk mail to me. Unless I know the person. Or something really jumps out at me. On Facebook, there's like, you see the picture.
Okay. You know, we've got a caller. This
we
is
do.
A monumental moment here on Books and Beer.
I am so excited.
Yeah. Alex, you out there?
Yeah. I'm enjoying your discussion today, and I just wondered what you think is a good thing that a dad should know about being in the midst of raising a couple of teenage daughters. Any wisdom that what do you think I should know that?
What a great question!
Yeah,
I wish every single dad would call in and ask this question. I think that the most important thing that you can do for your teenage daughter is to really know her, like to really hear what she's saying. And you know, I know that there's a lot of noise around what teenagers are saying, but to really. She will know by the way you listen to her and the way you look at her that you are really appreciating who she is.
Okay.
And the more you focus on who she is, the larger that part of her becomes. And I really think it strengthens girls as they're growing up to just feel known by their parents, and particularly their father.
Hmm.
Because she's going to seek out this relationship later. So if you sort of dismiss her, then in 10 years she's going to be looking for a guy who's a little dismissive of her.
Okay.
So
yeah, I got to work on that. So yeah, I would. Okay. Yeah. So basically, yeah, listening and which is a huge challenge for me. And
it's a huge challenge for all of us. Don't be too hard on yourself. It's hard to, you know, we're busy.
Yeah. And just contact.
Yeah. And time.
Yeah.
Eye contact and the amount of time that you spend. And as long as just, you know, you don't have to keep saying it, but as long as she feels like you think she's important, she will feel like she's important. And I can't think of anything that really matters more than that as going through this time.
Yeah. That's excellent. Strategy, I guess you could say. Yeah. Okay.
What a great dad to have called and asked this question.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, man. You pray for me. That's all I can tell you.
Okay. You got it.
Alex, thanks for the call.
All right. Good luck. Sure. Wow.
All right. Well, sticking with teaching mode here, you do some professing and teaching at a local college.
I do. I'm teaching at the Writing Institute at Sarah Lawrence College, and I am teaching a novel writing class, and it's seminar style. I have a co-teacher, Eileen Palma, who's also an author, and we sit around a table with 11 students, and we just dig deep into the craft of novel writing, and it is so much fun. It is really, I mean, it's such a fun job. And the group gels after a little while. You know, I can feel them bonding and sort of staying after class to talk about their work with each other. And I feel like it's probably going to end up helping my writing.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. We're going to take a break. Back in a couple minutes with Annabelle Monahan, author of A Girl Named Digit. And we will sample the Rushing Duck Lethargic Mallard here on Books and Beer.
And national news. Here is the latest update from Fox News Radio on 1460 WEOX.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lillian Liu. The man who was once third in line for the presidency pleading guilty to lying to the FBI. Dennis Hastert has now left the Chicago courtroom.
Now, the prosecution has recommended 6 months in prison, but the maximum is 5 years in prison. The sentencing has now been set for February.
Fox's Mike Tobin. American students sliding in the 2015 Nation's report card.
The report, officially known as the National Assessment of Education Progress, says only about a third of the nation's eighth graders were at proficient or above in math and reading, slipping over the last 2 years. Among fourth graders, the results were slightly better. About 2 in 5 scored proficient or better. And while scores slipped a little in reading, both fourth and eighth graders were higher than 1990s results.
Fox Radio's Tanya J. Powers. And the Fed is not expected to hike interest rates when it issues a statement this afternoon following a two-day policy meeting. Fox News, we report. You decide.
Chris, can you put the video game controller down for a second?
I can talk and play. Oh, I'm totally annihilating this punk kid in Nebraska.
I just feel like you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2!
Well, you know, you still ride your skateboard to work, there's the comic book collection, the race car bed.
Look, I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I picked up a few savings tips at feedthepig.org. I have control over my financial life now, and that feels pretty grown up.
Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. Putting some money from every paycheck into a savings account or contributing to your 401k can make a big difference later. For free ideas and easy tips on ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org. So, I bet I look like a grown up to you now.
Well, except for the footy pajamas, I'd have to agree.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Today's community programs are brought to you by Assaf & Siegel, one of the preeminent law firms in New York State. Based in Albany, the state capital, Asaf and Siegel now serves clients all across the Empire State and in New York City as well. Senior partner Michael Asaf is an acclaimed and well-known civil litigator with over 29 years of caring, compassionate experience, specializing in difficult and contentious high-net-worth matrimonial and family law disputes in every county of our state. Asaf and Siegel, his full-service firm, also specializes in real estate development, zoning, urban planning, bankruptcy law and personal injury and healthcare matters, plus estate litigation and entertainment law with an emphasis on First Amendment issues. The firm is Asaf and Siegel. Michael Asaf is the senior partner. 855-339-5992. 855-339-5992. The firm is Asaf and Siegel.
This is Jen Graziano of Zion Memorial Chapel and Cox and Graziano Funeral Homes. Every Wednesday at noon, I am here to talk with the WVOX listeners about subjects we all need to know and think about. Time to Talk, every Wednesday at noon, we'll have our lines open for you to call and ask questions about what families should know at very sensitive times of life. So tune in at noon on Wednesdays, and let's take the time to talk.
Now all over the world, 1460 WVOX. WVOX.
Welcome back to Books and Beer. I am your host, Michael Malone, with our guest, Annabelle Monahan. I want to give a quick update on some past guests that we've had, including Anne-Marie Martin, author of the locally set horror novel, The Hollow. She's got her children's book, The Spinfords, about a family of plucky spiders coming out in February. And if you'll pardon the self-promotion, my own novel, Betsy Town, will be out, let's say, soon. I've got a couple great designers, Chris Rucker and Lori Pagnozzi, doing their thing, and it looks really good, and I can't wait for it to come out. In the meantime, you can catch up with parts one and two of my Tompkins trilogy, No Never, No More, and When I Was Punk, which are both on Amazon. Betsy Town is part three of the trilogy, self-promotion mode off. Okay, I want to talk about the Rushing Duck lethargic mallard. And before I do that, I want to give you a little background on Rushing Duck. You might be wondering what the heck a Rushing Duck is. The brewery is located in Chester, New York, up in Orange County. And the name comes from a Hoboken colloquialism. Let me read from their website here. In the post-prohibition era, it was common for people to go to their neighborhood bar and get a container filled with draft beer to bring home to drink. This is not unlike the growlers that are common now. However, the containers back then did not have to be any specific size or shape. In fact, the container did not even need to have a lid. My grandfather's container of choice was a metal pail that he and his buddies dubbed a duck. So rushing the duck was running off to the bar to get a refill, and that begat the Rushing Duck Brewing Company in Chester, New York. So we had a chance to sample an interesting little brew. It is a partnership between Rushing Duck and DeChico's. DeChico's is, as you probably know, a small chain of local grocery stores with great beer selection. This is the Lethargic Mallard. The name, obviously, a little play on Rushing Duck. It's a Berliner Weiss brewed in collaboration with DeChico. Dry hopped with Eldorado, Simcoe, and Centennial hops. So a very unique brew, as Annabelle said, almost doesn't taste like beer. What'd you think of this thing?
I like it. I like it, but I if you handed this to me in a wine glass, I would think it was something else.
Okay.
It's a little bit like the lemon meringue pie you might have left over after Thanksgiving meal, except that it's really tart.
Yeah.
It feels like tart alcoholic lemonade.
Yep. Yeah. Tart is, yeah, like a really, really well-made kind of, I don't know what the kids drink today, but those empties that I see at the ball field of, you know, some sort of lemonade beverage.
What is a hard lemonade? I've seen that. What is that?
They call it a malt beverage. It's sort of like a something vaguely beer-ish, but just loaded up with sugar.
But this doesn't feel sweet. I mean, this is the opposite of the last one we tried. It doesn't feel sweet at all.
Yeah, it's a really well-made, very, very unique little brew. A Berliner Weiss. Lemonade is something, the color and the taste, there are hints of lemonade there. And something I would associate with summer, but something that is well enough made where I think it would hold up well in this time of year as well. So you're thinking After some lemon meringue pie, kind of
birds
of a feather.
It's actually delicious. Your third sip is more delicious than your first sip.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, hearkening back to our very first show a year ago, the food critic Julia Sexton referred to a beer as having a more-ishness, the state of making you want more and more. So, yeah, and I kept meaning to use that word every show, and I forgot until now. But did you detect some more-ishness in this lethargic mallard?
I do. I always thought that was the pretzels I was eating along with it that were making me thirsty. But no, it's delicious.
Okay. All right, we're going to do the speed round. Are you up for this?
Okay, I'm ready.
This is physically taxing, but hopefully you're...
I'm an athlete.
Okay, good. Favorite thing about Westchester County?
The trees.
Huh. Least favorite thing about Westchester County?
The taxes.
Okay. Favorite Westchester restaurant?
Ruby's Oyster Bar in Rye, New York.
Okay.
Best hamburger in town.
Really?
Yes.
Good
delicious.
Good to know. Favorite Westchester bookstore?
I'm going to lose some friends saying this. My favorite is The Voracious Reader in Larchmont, New York. It is an all children's bookstore.
Okay.
So it feels like a wonderland when you walk in there. It's just, and everything's sort of at children's eye level.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
How are they doing business-wise?
I hope they're doing really well.
Yeah, it's a tough concept. But
it is a tough, but they've been there for a while, and they've opened up a little snack shop so you can get a cupcake while you're there. You know, so it feels a little bit like an event more than just someplace to go to shop for a book.
Well, better margins on cupcakes than books, unfortunately.
Probably.
Okay. If I could read only one author for the rest of my life, it would be...
Margaret Atwood.
Huh.
That's an easy one.
Okay.
She's very dark, but I have to love her.
Well, it's good to pick someone with a lot of books to sustain you for the rest of your life.
I'm going
to
live a long time, yes.
Okay, good. Author or book that everyone else loves, but I just don't get?
You know, this was really easy, too, because I'm sort of in the middle of it. Anthony Doerr's All the Light We Cannot See it just won the book award.
Uh-huh.
It is the greatest book of all time. He's coming to Rye to speak next week, and it's the biggest event we've had ever. I can't get through it. There's
really?
Something, the writing is beautiful, the setting is beautiful. I just can't emotionally dig into this book, and I'm more than halfway through.
Yeah.
It's just a very, and I think I'm the only person in the world who feels this way.
Interesting. I've heard raves about it. I've not read it, so you've not encountered another individual?
No. Intellectual people love it. Less intellectual people love it. I think that books are a little bit like dogs. Like they find you when at the right time for you to read them. This is not the right time for me to read this book. I just can't make my heart go there for some reason.
Wow.
I know. So I'm going to go hear him speak and then I have to finish it.
Okay. All right, you might refrain from asking any questions because...
right. Now I've just said on the air that I'm a hater.
It's okay. All right, any recommendations from you, anything you've read recently that you want to mention to listeners here?
I really loved The Memory of Running.
Okay.
And I can't remember who wrote it, so because I just had a beer. And a book called Heft I really loved.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually both sort of about obese people muddling through life, but both really beautifully written.
Yeah.
And I'm reading The Perfume Collector right now that I really like. Amy Poehler's book was funny.
Oh, was it?
Yes, Please.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's great.
I mean, big shocker that her book is funny.
Right. Do you do book clubs or anything like that?
I was in a book club a while back, and now I am only in a book club with my 9-year-old son.
Okay.
We're currently reading The Lightning Thief.
With
three other little boys and their mothers. Yeah, we eat pizza. And it's very fun.
Oh, fun.
But no, I'm not in a grown-up book club anymore.
Is he a Goosebumps consumer?
He likes Goosebumps. And we saw the movie. Have you seen the movie?
My son saw it yesterday. I did not see it.
Okay, it's excellent.
I heard it was great.
Yeah, yeah I mean, you could have knocked me over with a feather because I had very low expectations about that movie. It is so beautifully done. I don't know how they figured out how to make that into a movie, but it's great.
Yeah, but my wife said it was very meta in that R.L. Stine is in the movie playing R.L. Stine, I guess?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic.
And the plot moves along. I mean, it's just, it's got all the right pieces. It's great.
Okay. All right. So what's next for you in terms of writing and publishing?
I need to finish the third and final digit book. And I'm a little bit stuck. So I'm trying to take my own tips from my novel writing class to get myself unstuck. There's just a few plot things that I'm stumbling on. But Double Digit, the second book, ends in a bit of a cliffhanger. So I'm starting to get some angry emails like, are you kidding me? Where's the third book? How is this going to turn out? So if that's not enough to push me along, I don't know what is.
Oh, that's a nice problem to have.
Right. I got to get my act together.
Right, right. So tell me about your writing process. Are you a morning writer or after the kids are home from school? When do you tend to bang out the most work?
I wake up, I go for a really short run, I take a shower, I sit down at 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And then, if I'm really working on something. And I will sit there until 2:45 until I have to get my kids. And wow. then all hell breaks loose. There's really not a chance. And by the time they go to bed, I'm so tired, I just go to bed. So It's really just that window during the day. When you're really involved, like the most fun thing, as you know, about when you're really involved in writing fiction, it stays in your head the rest of the day.
Sure.
So no matter what you're doing, you're still thinking about it and you're still sort of hanging out with those characters.
A blessing and a curse at the same time. Huh?
It is. It is. Because I find that when I'm really working on something, I'm really not listening to anything anybody's saying to me. You know, I'm just completely like tuned out. Like, oh, great. Okay.
Sure. So when you sit down to write, are you spending any time kind of cruising the internet and wasting time, or you're pretty good about it?
I try. It depends what sort of pressure I have on me. I mean, I can get sucked into the internet like anybody else. I read one time that Suzanne Collins will only write on a computer where the Wi-Fi is turned off.
Wow.
And, she's done pretty well. So sometimes I try to do that. I find that turning my Wi-Fi off is really like terrifying to me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what I think I'm going to miss, like a coupon from the old Navy, or I don't know what I think is going to happen. But if I can do that, that's a terrific thing to do.
Turn
my phone off.
Yeah. Although you need your Wi-Fi for research purposes while you're writing too, I would think, huh?
Or... You do, but let's be honest, I don't do a lot of research.
I gotcha. Okay. Any advice for aspiring novelists out there?
Yeah. I mean, just all the advice that you hear all the time, you have to just sit down and write. You should obviously take my class at Sarah Lawrence, but we can talk about writing forever. But you just have to sit down and get in shape for it and stay at it.
Got it. Okay. A huge thank you to Annabelle Monahan, author of A Girl Named Digit, for coming on our show today.
Thank you. This was such fun.
Good, good. All right. Well, I am sad to report I'm signing off from this show due primarily to an increased level of busyness at my day job. But I'd like to thank the owner of this station, William, for twisting my arm to get me to do a show. And thank you to Don and Gerald for making me sound presentable every other week. And thank you to listeners and everyone at WVOX for giving me this great platform for the past year. Books and Beer may come back as a podcast, but in the meantime, I trust you'll continue to seek out good books and beer produced in the Lower Hudson Valley and beyond. Thank you very much.